Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Evolution Radio, where the evolution is the revolution.
Time will bring the real end of our trial. Today there'll be no remnants, no trace, no retention. We'll feel less within you. Today you won't remember, man. Your face will be the reason I smile, but I will not see what I cannot have forever. I'll always tell you, I hope you feel the same. When my affliction had to fill out my prescription, found the way I must be. I had to set you free. Away from me to see clearly the way that love can be when you are not with me.
Let's first take a look at the ratification of the amendment, because this is a matter of controversy that got me into a lot of trouble for raising it in the Reconstruction chapter of my American history book. But I'm only repeating a totally mainstream interpretation. I found it hilarious. People never even heard of this before, the argument that the 14th Amendment was not constitutionally ratified. I mean, this The old National Review used to just take this for granted. I mean, old conservative publications, libertarians, all understood this. In the 1950s, U.S. News and World Report published an editorial saying, of course, we all know the 14th Amendment wasn't legitimately ratified. I mean, this was just sort of common knowledge. Now I say it today, and I get like Max Boot saying, oh my gosh, where did Woods get this crazy idea? Like I just invented it. Sort of funny. Well, let's look at what is the claim being made here. There are a few factors to take note of when we look at the ratification of the 14th Amendment. First, we have the fact that the amendment was proposed in Congress, and two-thirds of the people present voted to approve the amendment. And then it gets sent out to the states, and then three-quarters of the states have to ratify the amendment for it to take effect. Well, one thing we can note about the passage of the 14th Amendment is that it was not, shall we say, entirely without blemish. At the time that the amendment was set to be voted on and discussed, John P. Stockton was a newly elected senator from New Jersey, and he was known to be an opponent of the 14th Amendment. And he took his seat, duly took his seat in the U.S. Senate at the beginning of the 39th Congress. Well, informal canvassing of senators made quite clear that there was no two-thirds majority in favor of the amendment at that time. In fact, it turned out that the amendment would have been one vote short of passage. So, a motion was introduced not to seat John Stockton. But he's already been seated. This is the problem. He's already been seated. So you can't really vote not to seat somebody who has been seated. If he's been seated, you're supposed, and you want to get rid of him for one reason or another, you have to vote to expel him. But expulsion requires a two-thirds vote. They didn't have a two-thirds vote to expel him. So they voted not to seat somebody who had already been seated. Okay? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, how can something be both A and not A at the same time and in the same manner? So they voted not to seat this man who had already been seated. And then they went ahead and voted to approve the 14th Amendment. Now that's, you know, it's really not legal. It's right, not a proper procedure. But that's actually the least of the problems associated with the amendment. Then it goes out to the states. Now Tennessee ratifies the amendment. But here's how Tennessee ratified the amendment. The problem that was occurring in Tennessee was that opponents of the amendment were refusing to show up at the state house and thereby preventing a quorum. Okay, I mean, you have to have a certain minimum number of people present in order to conduct business. Well, opponents of the amendment thought one way to prevent its ratification is just not to show up, and then they wouldn't have a quorum. Well, in order to get a quorum, two of the anti-amendment Tennessee legislators were actually kidnapped and forcibly brought to the state house and declared to be present so that the vote could take place. Now, there are some sticklers, you know, who think that kidnapping is immoral, you know, who would throw, you know, some doubt on this, the legality of this. And the thing is that when the House Speaker called the roll, well, these two representatives refused to answer. They refused to say they were present because in their mind, they weren't, you know, spiritually, they weren't present. They were only there, you know, under duress, I mean, really by force. So they refused to answer the roll, but nevertheless, they were declared present so that the amendment could be ratified. In Oregon, there was a situation that was at least as irregular as that one. In Oregon, you had a case where the legislature of Oregon voted on the amendment, and they voted to approve the amendment. But then it was discovered that two of the Republicans who had been elected in Oregon had actually not been legally elected. When they actually looked again at the votes, it turned out that Democrats had been elected in those two seats. So two Republicans were removed, replaced by two duly elected Democrats. So some people thought, well, we should re-vote on the amendment now that we have the legitimately elected people present. This time they voted not to approve the amendment. But they were told by the federal government, sorry, we take your first answer. Okay. New Jersey. Now, New Jersey and Ohio, the irregularities there are, it's not quite so clear cut. I mean, obviously in Oregon, there's no excuse for that. And in Tennessee, there's obviously no excusing that. New Jersey and Ohio is not quite so clear-cut, but arguably there's at least some kind of irregularity here. Because both of these states rescinded their ratifications And they rescinded them, though, before the amendment went into effect. It was still being voted on by other states. I mean, you could argue that if the amendment has already gone into effect and then you vote to rescind your ratification, it is probably too late. But arguably, they may at least have had some right to withdraw. But they were told once again, sorry, we take your first answer. And New Jersey in particular, at the time that they attempted to withdraw their ratification, they actually announced, they said that we are fearful that this amendment has been worded ambiguously with deliberate intent so that in the future it can be used to deprive us of our liberties. Very interesting. Well, the most fundamental reason, though, that there was an illegality involved here is that here you had the southern states, which they ratified the 13th Amendment in 1865, abolishing slavery. No one had any problem with them then. 1867 rolls along. The radical Republicans in Congress, who are the wing of the Republican Party who favor, you know, a very harsh settlement with the South, now that they're in power, in 1867, they declare other than Tennessee, they like Tennessee because Tennessee ratified the 14th Amendment. But other than Tennessee, the other former states of the Confederacy, the other 10 states, were declared in 1867 to be illegal, without legal governments. And they're going to be militarily occupied. They're going to be divided into 5 military districts. They're going to be deprived of self-government. They're going to have, in effect, military courts open. So that was all declared in 1867. That was said about the southern states. But at the same time, these same states were told, you have to ratify an amendment to the Constitution. Now they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, because either they're legal states or they're not. If they are legal states, then you shouldn't be occupying them with the military. If they're not legal states, then you can't ask them to ratify an amendment to the Constitution, because they're not legal states. I mean, you may as well ask France to ratify an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It would be perfectly irrelevant. So in other words, you're depriving them of all the privileges of statehood, but nevertheless, you're going to impose on them one of the burdens of statehood. You're going to actually demand that they ratify an amendment to the Constitution when you yourself have just said they're not even legal. The states, as constituted in the South, are not legal. So it's been argued that, therefore, their votes could not have counted. In no way could an illegal state, by definition, that vote for the amendment be counted as a vote in favor of the amendment. I mean, that's not to mention the coercion involved here. I mean, there was one congressman who said that when the 14th Amendment was sent out to the states, Tennessee approved it, but the other 10 southern Confederate states rejected it. It was a northern congressman who said, well, the southern states have rejected the 14th Amendment, so we are going to march upon them at bayonet point until they do ratify it. Well, most legal principles would have it that a decision that you're forced to make under duress is not legally binding. So we have that difficulty as well. And for these reasons and even several others, very recently, like early 1990s, Forrest MacDonald concluded that the 14th Amendment was never constitutionally
As I said, this book demonstrates that we are not as different as we like to think that we are. So what I'm going to go over real brief right now is what the attributes are of the good black woman. Since she's not on television, we may not recognize her. Okay. Now, the good black woman has 7 attributes, and then I'm going to explain to you how to utilize those in your day-to-day life. The good black woman has self-discipline, courteousness, cheerfulness, self-respect, intelligence, cleanliness, and love. Now, we've heard that terminology. You know, it's like one of those where they tell you, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. What do that mean? You know, how can I make that functional in my day-to-day life to benefit me as a practice? It sounds like all theory. Where's the practicum? What do I do? The good black woman has self-discipline. That's self-control. Let me make that real for you, sisters. We can start with our mouth. The good black woman can control her mouth. She don't have to say everything that comes up. It's okay if he get the last word sometime. You know. She don't cuss in public. And she works on not cussing in private. She don't tear a man down with her mouth because they can't out-argue her. Can't nobody out-argue her. I have charged that we nag our men too much. We keep our men's head tied up so much with our petty grievances about our personal relationship that he don't have time to think and plan for our future. Because he got to deal with what's going to happen with us every day. You know, it's real odd. When the black man come home, he almost have to do a wind test or stick his toe in the door. He don't know what's waiting. He don't know who in there today. He know it's a possibility that there's some kind of new monster that he didn't even know about the other day. So, you know, we need to not make it like that. We need to not be so vicious with our mouth. You know, men are not petty like that. They're not going to out-argue us. And it has been proven that verbal abuse is just as harmful as physical abuse. So let's not use our mouth to do that to him. The good black woman is courteous. She says, "Thank you, baby. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate every effort you make. Try harder. I'm gonna work with you. Thank you. I know you did your best." Now that's a whole new language. But just to say that during the course of the day, every day, with the man that you're trying to be with or want to be with will make our life easier. We can't get it if we don't give it. We keep wanting them to give us and do something for us that we refuse to do and give to them. It don't work like that. The good black woman has self-respect. She don't have to go out naked just to get the attention of a man. I have sisters all over the country, and they come up to me after the lectures, and they'll be talking to me, and they'll say, "Well, you know, all he think about is sex. All he think about is my body." I say, "Why don't you show him something else?" Right. And then here's the really good one. They'll come up, and they'll have on a weave. They have on false eyelashes, another whole face, false fingernails, and all of that. And then they'll say, "But I'm looking for a real man." The good black woman can pull a dress down without thinking that it devalues her. She doesn't have to use her body because she has so many other good attributes about herself to get the attention of a man. We can take the sisters in a position to take all of the charge and sexual energy out of the black community by just dressing differently. We have the power and control over that. That don't stop you from being beautiful. That don't stop you from getting a man. And it certainly puts things on the right perspective so some other judgments can be made other than physical. Don't take no knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to have a sexual reaction. That's the most base. We spend less time doing that than anything else we do. So, you know, that doesn't always have to be the forefront issue. We know we are capable of that. The good black woman has intelligence, meaning that she knows how to behave properly in the streets. She's not in the wrong place. Some of our women don't know what else to do other than go to the bar. They need some activities. Some of our women thinking that staying home on the weekend is some kind of sin. Some of our women think that if they don't have a new outfit to wear every day, that they're going to self-destruct. You know, we have a lot of that kind of nonsense going. Every time we buy new outfits and clothes or whatever, all we're doing is sending money out of our community. We don't own no clothing store. If the white man closed the shoe factory, we'd all be here barefooted tonight. We don't own no shoe factory. You know, very base things that we don't own that we put our money into and demand we have to have them. A lot of times our men look at us and know that he ain't never going to be able to make enough money to give us all of the things we say we want. And don't no man want to be with no woman who he constantly got to deny her the things that she says she wants. And that represents failure to him. to have to always, you know, not be able to provide us with what we ask for. One of the ways we can do that is to start being satisfied with less. You know, the good black woman is clean. Now, that's a hard one. The good black woman try to keep the house clean. Good black woman is clean about her own body. You know, a lot of those things we kind of take for granted, but all of our people don't know about that. There are people who are angry with me because I even describe the fact that some of us as sisters don't have the proper personal hygiene, as if that don't exist. We have too much falsehood and pretense going about our condition. Everybody that's dressed up ain't clean. You know, that's just the truth. We have to look at our condition in the light of truth. Stop reacting emotionally and pretending that just because we don't want to do one of the most difficult things that I deal with out here is trying to teach our people the difference between an actual fact and an opinion. Our people think that they can accept or reject truth based on how they feel about it. Your feelings don't change the truth. The truth is just going to be there. You can feel any kind of way you want to feel about it. Those kind of emotions have kept us from growing. Because anything we don't like, we just reject that and say, well, I don't believe that. That don't mean that it's not the truth. It just makes you a disbeliever. The good black woman practices non-possessive loving. Now, y'all know that's a hard one. Now, envy is wanting what someone else has. And jealousy, of course, is just selfishness. Non-possessive loving is not an easy one for us to practice. And, of course, I have a lot of sisters and some brothers who are in disagreement with me saying that. But the actual fact is that our men are outnumbered about 5-1. And nature is going to require that the men take responsibility for more than one woman and her children. Most of our men have children by more than one woman anyway. So I don't know why that was such a surprise, allegedly, when I said that. The black man has not been waiting on me to tell him he could have more than one woman. You know, I'm in agreement with the rest of y'all. I don't think he should do that, but I fail like you did. There are some things perhaps about the nature of our man that we have been given some definitions about that are not true. There are some things he can do that we call him a dog. We do not have the same capabilities as a man. I am not talking about fornication and adultery. That's something else. I'm talking about actual responsibility of fatherhood and husbandhood of another family. That's quite different from fornication and adultery. We don't have the same capabilities as them. That's right. A man can have two homes, two sets of in-laws, he can eat dinner at two houses, two sets of children, two garages, two separate sets of friends attached to that woman. He can have all of that. We can't do that. We can't cook dinner at two houses. We can't sleep with one man 4 nights a week and another one 3. Ain't no man gonna agree with that. We can't have one set of children. We leave in one place and go and stay in another place and take care of another set. It doesn't work for us. Now, that does not mean that we can't have sex with more than one man. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just taking responsibility for your children. Now, certainly, every man can't take financial responsibility for all of his children. He can do something. But a man who is spending time with a child is going to do something for it. Because then they'll find out what we have since we've been taking care of them by ourselves. You don't like to always say, no, I can't do it. No, I ain't got it. So the children will make you get it up. You spend some time with it. You know, that's an important thing. The effectiveness of the principles that I just described, their usefulness has not diminished just because modern opinion has changed about them. There is not a black man in this room who does not still enjoy it if his woman bake him a cake. Well, our young daughters are being raised and taught that that's old style and that's out of fashion. We are not making those rules. Somebody else is, and they're imposing them on us and making us think that we have to qualify under them. I tell the brothers, just like I tell the sisters, if you have a woman that you've been working with for months or years, and you can't get that woman to get in agreement with your program, then get rid of her and get another one. And I tell the sisters the same thing. If you're with a man you can't agree with, don't make his life miserable. Get with a man you can agree with. But we spend too much time living in hell with each other. We spend too much time tearing each other down, trying to make the other person do different or function different. If you want somebody to change, first change yourself. We set the example. We are the teacher. We are the mother. We set the example.
Don't even think about changing the station. You're listening to The Bottom Line with your host, Joey L. You're listening to Evolution Radio. Visit MakeMoreCommerce.com for more remedies with Joey L, where remedy meets preparation.
Will you leave?
You're listening to Evolution Radio. Visit MakeMoreCommerce.com for more remedies with Joey L., where remedy meets preparation. You're listening to the New Evolution Radio Network. Visit MakeMoreCommerce.com for more remedies with Joey L., where remedy meets preparation. You're listening to the New Evolution Radio Network. Visit JonahBay.com for more remedies.
And Cheyenne M. Cushion Muriel, would you state your name for the record, please? Your attribute for the record, please.
Cheyenne Matilda Cushion Muriel on behalf of the Marrakesh Empire Aboriginal Law.
All right. I want to ask you a couple of questions, please. The first question I want to ask you is, are you employed?
Objection, ma'am. This chairman is supposed to be about jurisdiction. This court has no jurisdiction. The court has no jurisdiction to determine its own jurisdiction for a basic issue in any case before a tribunal.
Well, if I have no jurisdiction to determine my own jurisdiction, how are you going to get that issue resolved?
Listen, this case in this courtroom is a colorable, incompetent court of jurisdiction. You can't, according to federal case law, you can't set another hearing to reach and determine your own jurisdiction. As I've stated for the record plenty of times, I'm only having threat, duress, and coercion, and because the prosecution falsely holds my property, and I'm here to clarify that matter. Other than that, I'm here under threat, duress, and coercion. It is completely against federal case law. It has power to act, and a court must have the authority to decide that question in the first instance. That's Rescue Army versus Municipal Court of Los Angeles. A departure by a court from the recognized and established requirements of law, however close apparent adherence to mere form and method of procedure, which has the effect of depriving one of a constitutional right, is an excess of jurisdiction.
May
you have the flag right behind you, ma'am.
May I interrupt you for a moment,
You
please?
May not, ma'am. Objection.
Would you, when you're done speaking, would you let me know so that I can ask a question?
I'm not obligated to answer any questions, so I have no intentions of answering any question.
Well, I'll ask it anyway, and you can decide what you want to say.
Thus, where judicial tribunal has no jurisdiction of the subject matter on which it assumes to act, its proceedings are absolutely void in the fullest sense of the term, Dillon versus Dillon. Courts enforcing mere statutes, as it is to my understanding, that this is a statute, not a constitutional violation of law. In fact, one of the hearings I had with you, you said people are not charged with constitutional violations. I don't understand how you could be enforcing statutes and you have to constitute the U.S. flag behind you, as if you don't say you hadn't taken an oath to uphold the Constitution. Courts enforcing their statutes do not act judicially, but merely ministerially. Thus, no judicial immunity, and unlike courts of law, do not obtain jurisdiction by service of process, nor even arrest and compel the parents. Boswell versus Otis. I've been here 3 or 4 times under threat, arrest, and coercion. Prosecution doesn't even have Otis in front of him. He has no objections. He has nothing to say. He cannot prove jurisdiction. This court should have been dismissed this case. This is a colorable court of incompetent jurisdiction. The fact that petitioner was released on a promise to appear before a magistrate for an arraignment, that fact is circumstance to be considered in determining whether the first instance there was a probable cause for the arrest. Monroe versus Popper. There's no discretion to ignore the lack of jurisdiction. Court must prove on the record all jurisdiction facts related to the jurisdiction asserted. A universal principle, as old as the law, is that proceedings of a court without jurisdiction are a nullity and its judgment therein without effect either on personal property. This case has already been put before the federal court and you will be receiving a notice of removal very shortly. This court has no jurisdiction. Prosecution can't prove jurisdiction. This case shall be dismissed and it will.
Did you file a notice of removal with the federal court?
Yes, you will be receiving it shortly.
All right. When I receive it, I will rule on it. This is my question to you, however. Are you employed?
I'm not employed. I'm not employed with any corporations incorporated with the state of New Jersey.
Are you employed with any corporation that's incorporated outside of the state?
Objection.
Of New Jersey?
I'm not here to answer questions about my employment. Last time I was made aware of this was supposed to be about whether this court has jurisdiction and clearly it doesn't. A question about employment has nothing to do with whether this court has jurisdiction, so I'm not obligated to answer those questions. Now, I shall not be answering any more of those questions that are not pertaining to jurisdictional facts.
Well, this is my question to you. I asked it before. If your position is that this court has no jurisdiction to determine its own jurisdiction.
Objection, man. That is not my ruling. That is not my holding. I've given you the federal case law regarding such. Maybe you can take some time out that you need to do to recheck that, but that's what the case law says, not what I said.
Well, I do have jurisdiction over you. Number one, you're here in my courtroom.
Objection,
number
ma'am.
Two.
You do not have jurisdiction over me. I'm here by way of threat, duress, and coercion. The federal case law stipulates already that compelled appearance and arrest warrants doesn't give a minister acting ministerially and not judicially enforcing their statute's jurisdiction. That's incorrect and false. You do not have jurisdiction because I'm here. You told me before when I was here that you would lock me up if I didn't come, which was threat, duress, and coercion.
I think that you misstate what I told you.
Objection, ma'am. I have not misstated. I have the videos. I have it on repeat, 24/7. I've seen you say.
I don't recall that I said I would lock you up.
Objection, okay. Ma'am. That's on the record.
Well, you can object all that you want, sir. And I will continue to have a difference of opinion about that. All right. Well, we'll continue with today's proceedings then. And I certainly appreciate the courtesy that you extend to me. All right, Mr. Walker, I know that you're here.
Yes,
you wish to be heard, sir?
Your Honor, I have Kevin Walker appearing on behalf of the Office of the Public Defender. We did receive, after the last hearing, a court order directing the Office of the Public Defender to represent this defendant. Did file a motion for reconsideration, noting that there has been no indigency determination, which is an essential component of our appointment. So I would ask respectfully that an indigency determination be made at this time, and absent that earlier order directing that represent this defendant be vacated.
All right, thank you. Do you wish to be heard on the issue, Mr. Luciano?
I don't, Judge.
All right. I have inquired of Cheyenne Mutata Cushamirel concerning his employment. He tells me he is not employed in the state of New Jersey by any corporation, and therefore I determine that he does not have the present ability to pay for counsel to proceed in this matter.
Objection, ma'am. I don't know this gentleman. I haven't made any contracts with the Public Defender's Office. I don't know what that was an attempt to do, but he does not have the authority to speak for me. So I would appreciate it if any non-identified parties are determining to act on my behalf. First, fill out an IRS Form 56 and notify the IRS that they're acting in some sort of fiduciary capacity.
All right. Let's talk about the issue of, Mr. Walker, I want to talk about the issue of jurisdiction. One of the issues that has been raised in this case and has been raised over and over again that really needs to be determined before we can proceed with it is with regard to jurisdiction. I have received, it was filed with the court, it was received in my chambers on January 7th. I'm not exactly sure if it was filed downstairs on a different day, something that has been entitled a non-negotiable affidavit of fact to dismiss with prejudice for lack of personum jurisdiction, lack of discovery, and lack of an injured party. It purports to raise the issue before the court of lack of jurisdiction with regard to Cheyenne Mutata Cushamir L. Despite what Cheyenne Mutata Cushamir L. says, this is not an application to the court to dismiss anything with anything. There are certain ways, as you are aware, Mr. Walker, to bring issues before the court. What we need to do is have the issue brought before the court properly by way of a notice of motion. I don't even know if Mr. Luciano got a copy of this, but certainly you know that any motion filed has to be served on the prosecutor. How much time does your office need in order to do that? And did you receive a copy of this?
Judge, I have not received a copy of that, and before I address that issue, I would respectfully request that you inquire into this defendant's assets to see whether he has the present ability to retain private counsel.
He tells me he isn't employed by a corporation, so.
Objection. This is obscene.
Sir?
I do
this
not
is the conversation that I'm having with Mr. Walker, not with you.
The way you didn't want me
to interrupt you, I would like you not to interrupt me or Mr. Walker.
Objection. This man cannot speak for me, man. I haven't filled out any public defender's applications nor contracts to agree to that. You cannot force me against my consent to have someone who has, I have no formal contract or agreement with to speak on my behalf. I'm a natural flesh and blood man. I don't have to have, yes ma'am, I do not have to have an attorney at law, a colorable attorney at law, de facto attorney at law, propose or purport to speak for me in any regards to these matters at hand.
March 23rd, sufficient time, Mr. Walker?
I think so,
Judge. All right. Then this matter shall be and hereby is continued until Monday, March 23rd at 9 o'clock.
Objection, ma'am. The notice of removal is already in. You will be receiving it today. So
if I receive it before March 23rd at 9 a.m., I am aware of my obligations when a matter has been removed to federal court. If for some reason the federal court does not accept it, or it's not properly filed, or there's something else, that's the next day for this proceeding.
Objection, ma'am. I will not be participating in any more of these proceedings.
Do what you want.
I'm sovereign. I can do that.
This is the only notice that I will give you of the proceeding on March 23rd at 9 o'clock in the morning. We don't send out letters reminding people. We'll simply expect that you will be here. Thank you very much.
He'll be contacted by my office, and we'll arrange an interview with him in the office, and he'll have to sign in.
Do you have his address?
The
P.O. box is right here.
Objection. If you attempt to contact me and negotiate any contracts with me, you will be getting sued in federal court too as well, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Tune in every Monday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. to Awake with Arset on the new Evolution Radio Network, where the revolution is the evolution.
One of the things about the law business, the legal industry, is some of the most important things about law are actually so simple that they're easy to overlook. And there are only about four very simple truths, and if you know and understand these truths, you will be empowered to win. Here's the first great secret. Where does the court get its jurisdiction? We have a two-tiered court system. There are the Supreme Courts and their tribunals. There are courts of inferior jurisdiction. When we're talking about Supreme Courts, like the United States Supreme Court and the Oklahoma Supreme Court, where do they get their jurisdiction? They get their jurisdiction because of who they are. But what about these courts of inferior jurisdiction? Where do they get their authority? The courts of inferior jurisdiction are empowered to act by pleadings sufficient to invoke their judicial authority. Which means that the people, not the attorneys, the people that walk into that court empower that person in a black robe to be a judge.
Listen closely to what this guy just said. It is earth-shaking and game-changing. It puts the ball in your hands. What is he saying exactly? An injured human being has to show up in court and testify under oath that they have been injured, period. Prosecuting attorneys testify like they are the injured party, and they are not the injured party. They don't get to testify because they are not the ones injured, but they do it all the time because no one puts them in their place. Trinzi versus Pegliaro states statements of counsel in brief or an argument are not sufficient for summary judgment. If the judge doesn't like it, it's too bad. The Supreme Court, this is a Supreme Court ruling, and basically what it's saying is to the lawyer, shut up and sit down. You don't get to testify.
Jurisdiction has four corners on it. It's a four-legged table. And if you take away one of those legs, it's not a court anymore. You win when you know how to invoke the court's jurisdiction when you empower that judge to make the decision that you want that judge to make. That's the second great secret, is the Constitution, state constitutions, statutes, laws, rules, what meaning do they have as you read them in their black and white print? They don't really mean anything except a hint, a suggestion of what the law is. Well, we have a common law system. The Supreme Court tells you what that means. To find out what the law is, we have to find out what the Supreme Courts have said that that particular law means. Now, that's the second great secret. We have a means of finding out what the law is. It's written down. Where do we find the common law? It's the federal and state annotated statutes. Because, again, that's a secret. They don't want you to know that. If you can read the annotated statutes, now you know what the law is. The state annotated statutes. Those annotated statutes are going to tell me what the law is. But they're going to publish the holding. They're going to tell you the essence of that decision. And that essence of that decision, out of that case, is that one paragraph, that one sentence, or maybe just that one phrase that you need to win, and that's all you need. Trinity versus Pagliaro is one of the most important cases that has ever been decided by the United States Supreme Court. But Trinity versus Pagliaro is absolutely earth-shaking. The holding of Trinity versus Pagliaro, statements of counsel in brief or argument are not sufficient for a summary judgment. Take it to heart, memorize it, get a tattoo that says it. Because that is one of the most important principles on law, in law. And that is one of the most powerful things that you will ever learn and have to use. That's according to the United States Supreme Court. But that one fourth thing that has probably been missing 50 million times in this country when we got shafted in the court was a competent witness. Where's the competent witness? That's the fourth leg on that table. That table doesn't have four legs. That court did not have jurisdiction. Period. You've got to have somebody at some point in time before the judgment raise their hand and testify under oath and subject to cross-examination, or it's nonsense. If the other side supports their pleadings with an affidavit, which they rarely do, but if they do, you subpoena that witness because you want to question them under oath. And the idea that is the kernel of truth in Trinity versus Pagliaro is a thread that runs through everything. Criminal, civil, it runs through everything. Administrative, it's got to be there. It's got to be there. How do I know? Here is a very good statement. And again, this is from an annotated statute. Actual facts, not mere allegations of complaint, are determinative of issue of jurisdiction. Isn't that what I just said? If there's no witness, there's no facts. If there's no facts, there's no what? No jurisdiction. It's not what I think. I think it, but it's not true because I think it. It's true because it's the law. It's the law because the Supreme Court says, yes, yes, you've got to have a competent witness to have that fourth leg on that table, or there's no jurisdiction.
So you get into a courtroom, you're sitting in court, and the prosecuting attorney stands up and he says, Mr. Johnson was caught urinating on the next door neighbor's pet. You stand up and you say, if you're Mr. Johnson, you stand up and you say, I object, Your Honor. Trinzi versus Pagliaro, statements of counsel in brief or an argument are not sufficient for summary judgment. See, the lawyer wasn't there. He doesn't know. He didn't see you piss on the neighbor's dog. He don't know what he's talking about. It's all hearsay. So you stand up and you object, and you do this three times, and on the third time, if the judge doesn't catch on, you take exception to it, and then later on in the course of the legal proceedings, you bring it back to that, and it'll get tossed out. There's no doubt about it. It's a slam dunk case. This isn't my opinion. This is Supreme Court rulings. This is the most powerful thing he could ever think of. And here's the thing. It does not matter what you are in court for. It doesn't matter if you're in a criminal court. It doesn't matter if you're in a civil court. It doesn't matter if you're getting sued for money or if you're getting sued for murder or if you're getting sued. It doesn't matter what it's for. You have to have a competent witness stand up and testify and say you injured him. The lawyer doesn't get to do it. In another case, a lawyer might get up and say, Mr. Flintstone stole 72 cases of paper clips. And he's just reading from his paper there. That's when you stand up and you say, objection, Your Honor, statements of counsel in brief or an argument are not sufficient for summary judgment. It's that freaking simple. The guy's got to sit down. He does not get to get up there and talk negatively about you. He don't know you. He doesn't get up there and get to say what an evil person you are because he has no first-hand knowledge. You can read it out of there. He's reading it out of the daily newspaper. He's an idiot. And it's your job, if you want your freedom, to stand up to him and say, I object, and stake Trinzi versus Pagliaro. It's that simple, folks.
Tune in every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on The Bottom Line with Joey L. on Evolution Radio. You're listening to Evolution Radio. Visit MakeMoreCommerce.com for more remedies with Joey L., where remedy meets preparation.
All right, all right, all right. What's happening? What's happening? Peace to the gods. What's going down? I'm your host, Joey Bounce L. Bay. You're sitting right here on the bottom line, right here on the New Evolution Radio Network. How y'all feeling tonight? This is a live show. We are live. Today is the 10th of June. We're moving right on through this year, ain't we? Y'all know I got a birthday coming up at the end of the month, right? 28th. So feel free to send your love donations. Not just playing. But no, for real though, you know, we all moving through the year. There's a lot going on. We had a seminar this weekend. Jonah and I, King, it was doing a private seminar down in Texas. We'll be in St. Louis next month. So if you would like to come out to St. Louis, make sure you come out to St. Louis and holler at us. We will be in St. Louis next month in July. Okay. The 21st and the 22nd of July, we'll be in St. Louis. All right. Now, as always, you can go to MakeMoreCommerce.com if you want to set up a consultation or get with me. We got a lot of packets out last week for nationality and people doing their genealogy and tax exemptions. So if you want to hop in that line, this is a good time, as always. Also, I would like to announce I have copies of a book, a very valuable book. The copies will be for sale. The copies are... If you would like a copy, you need to contact me in the private. Okay. The price on the book is $2,500. Okay. It's a very expensive book. The book value is around $15,000. That's a lot of our ancestors' information. Okay. So, if you want to get your hands on it, holler at me. We'll get you hooked up with the book. Okay. All right, so with that being said, I want to say peace to the gods. Welcome to the show. Tonight we're talking about trust. It's not going to be a very long show tonight because I actually have to get off the air a little bit early. But if you'd like to holler at me, go ahead and get yourself in the call lines. Call in number is 347-989-0194. Press the number 1 and I'll get you in. That's with my people in the chat who are listening live, or if you're listening live, just make sure you press 1. All right, so with that being said, let's get into it, because, you know, I'm sure most of y'all are familiar with this group on Facebook, right? It's called the Secure Party Group, and, you know, I'm often in these different groups, and there's a lot of conjecture in a lot of these groups about how to do different processes, what needs to be done, who's doing it correctly, you know, and there's just a lot of misinformation. So, you know, as always, because, you know, if you're listening to our sister station, you undoubtedly will know that the brother Jonah has been breaking down trust. So, for those of my listeners who have not had that opportunity, we're going to go over some of those things. And I'm going to break down this trust for y'all, right? And we're going to kind of start looking more in depth into trust, because why not? Now, let me just give you a basic understanding, though, okay? Because a lot of people don't seem to understand that trust is based on trust, right? Assets and wealth. But above all, it's based on trust. So do you trust me? Do I trust you? Do we trust each other? For the benefit of the trust. Are we trusting each other? Right? So, you know, my man Jonah, he doesn't own anything. He controls it. But his wife is his trustee. Right? And it's a very interesting concept, because that is the very foundation of trust, right? There's some people who have their mothers as trustees. There's some people who have people who are not related to them as trustees. Whatever the case may be, a trust is built upon the very foundation of trust. So let's look at a trustee, right? Because a trustee, and we're going to be looking tonight more at the trustee side of it, because I kind of want to have y'all have a better understanding of the fact that, because a lot of people ask me, well, can I have a U.S. citizen for a trustee? Of course you can. Okay? But let's look at the reasons why, right, instead of speculating. So let's not speculate. Okay? Let's go into it. Give me a second. Okay? Now, a trustee, okay, is a legal term, okay, which in its broadest sense is a synonym for anyone in a position of trust. So what's a position of trust, y'all? A position of trust is any position that requires its holder to enjoy the trust of those who elected or chose the holder, right? It's often used in a more restricted sense, defined by organization or a legislation. So according to one common definition, it is any position that has responsibility for, quote, cash, keys, or kids, quote, minors. Okay? The concept of keys refers to security or securities, including security, management, all that type of shit, right? Now, crimes committed by a person in a position of trust may be penalized more severely under the law, and those wishing to occupy positions of trust may be subject to special restrictions such as background checks. According to another common definition, it is any position of authority over any other person or within the organization, for example, as a supervisor. Okay. So what we're talking about here with this trust here, okay, is the ability to be able to control cash or an asset, okay, or something of that nature. Okay. Now, you know, I'm going to tell you something that's interesting, because a lot of people don't understand that when you're in court and you're dealing with child support, don't you know that that's a trust? A constructive trust. Okay? That they're regulated. So, for example, a typical position of trust at a personal level involves child custody. Okay? Or power of attorney. The same would be true for the five standard professions: medicine, law, finance, education, engineering, okay, business. Any regulated profession dealing with health and safety of others usually requires certification, licensing, right? That's also what they call a position of trust. All right, so I want y'all to get a full understanding of this position that we call trust, right? Now, let's go back, because we're talking about trustee, right? And remember, a trustee is a legal term, which in the broadest sense is a synonym for anybody who's in the position of trust. And so they can refer to any person who holds property, authority, or position of trust or responsibility for the benefit of another person, right? So when y'all setting up these 9-8 trusts, these foreign trusts, what you're doing is you're setting up a trust for the benefit of who? The spiritual man, right? The person who is not able to own anything but control everything. Now, the more expansive sense, okay, encompasses persons who serve, for example, a board of trustees, okay? This is, so let's take the Carnegie Foundation. They have a board of trustees. It's not just one trustee, right? There's multiple trustees. So one person can't go rogue and take all the fucking money. A trust can be set up either to benefit particular persons or for any charitable purposes. Why do you think I tell y'all to set up y'all businesses as charitable associations under your religious trust? Doesn't it make sense now? See, when you're setting up things under trust are set up specifically for the benefit of somebody else. Okay? See, but not generally for charitable purposes. Typical. So let me give you a typical example, right? Will trust, right? These are what they call testamentary trust. The trust which arises upon the death of a testator, okay? Which is specified in his or her will, right? So I don't deal with wills, because wills can be, they can be probated, if you will. Okay? Now, you also have a pension trust, okay? This is the pension fund a lot of people pay into, okay? So when people get a pension, they're paying into a trust fund that pays them back when they retire. Okay? They also call this a benefit plan, where a fixed sum of money is paid regularly to somebody. Okay? Now, let's talk about some general duties of the trustee. Right? So, number one, trustees carry out express terms of the trust instrument. Right? So what is a trust instrument? Let's talk about that. A trust instrument is your trust indenture. Okay? So let's pull that up. I want y'all to have a working definition. Okay? A trust indenture is an agreement in a bond contract made between a bond issuer and a trustee that represents the bondholder's interests by highlighting the rules and the responsibilities that each party must adhere to. It may also include and indicate whether the income stream for the bond is derived from. Okay? So bonds are issued to lenders or investors to raise money for a corporation or a governmental body. The issue bond, the issuers hire a third-party trustee, usually a bank or a trust company, to represent the interest of its bond investors. The agreement entered by the issuer and the trustee is referred to as the trust indenture. A trust indenture is a legal binding contract that is created to protect the interest of the bondholders. The trustee's name and the contact information is included in the document, which highlights the terms and conditions that the issuer, lender, and the trustee must adhere to during the life of the bond. The section of the trustee's role is important, as it gives a clear indication of how unforeseen incidents will be dealt with, right? So, for example, if a conflict of interest arises, okay, or comes up involving the trustee's role as a fiduciary, okay, so most of you niggas want to be your own fiduciary, but you can't. You got to have a fiduciary, right? So in certain trust indentures, the issue must be resolved, right, within like 90 days, okay? A trust indenture also includes characteristics of the bond, such as the maturity date, the face value, coupon rate, payment schedule, purpose of the bond issue. One section of the trust indenture dictates the circumstances and the process surrounding what they call a default. Okay? Now, the indenture establishes a collective action. Okay? Now, a collective action is a mechanism under which the creditor or the bondholders can collect in a fair, orderly manner if a default takes place. A bondholder should be aware of these situations. Understanding the proper sequence of events will allow them to take the proper course of action. Okay? Now, let's talk about what they call protective or restrictive covenants. Okay? Because sometimes these are highlighted in the trust indenture as well. So, for example, the trust indenture may indicate whether an issue bond is what they call callable. Okay? If the issuer's if the issuer can call the bond, the indenture will include a call protection for the bondholder. Now, a bond is callable. What that means is that the bond can be redeemed by the issuer prior to its maturity. Okay? Now, we're getting a little deep here. And I have to let y'all know. Actually, I'm sorry, y'all. I have to take a very quick commercial break. Very quick. We'll be right back.
Safe for everyone.
Tune in every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on The Bottom Line with Joey L. on Evolution Radio.
All right. I apologize about that, audience. I had a slight family emergency I had to deal with for a second. It actually was a family emergency. You know, people say that shit, but I actually had one, so I had to deal with that real quick. But thank you for y'all patience. So let me jump back in while I left off, because I was talking about the trusted venture, and I was telling y'all, we're kind of getting a little deep here when we start talking about bonds and shit, okay? But I want y'all to understand that a trustee's job, when it comes down to a trust, okay, is regulated by the trust indenture. So if the trust indenture itself, okay, isn't sound tight, your trustee can go rogue. You got your rogue trustee, you might lose a lot of money. Right? Now, let's go back a little bit, because I don't want to get too far off base. Now, let's go back to the general duties of trustees. So the trustee must carry out the express terms of the trust instrument, okay? Which we now know is what's called an indenture. Okay? I have those available on my website. Now, a trustee is bound to act in accordance with the terms of the trust upon which he or she holds the trust property, okay, and commits a breach of trust if he or she departs from the terms of the trust. However, a trustee may act otherwise than in accordance with the terms of the trust if all beneficiaries, okay, they call them suitors, okay, and together are absolutely entitled, okay, direct the trustees to do so, okay. So you have to understand that the trustees, okay, unless otherwise told so, but to do exactly what they're told to do. Okay? The duty is also to defend the trust. Okay? They also have a duty to make prudent trust investments. Okay? They must also be impartial among beneficiaries. The trustee must act impartially between individual beneficiaries as well as between different class of beneficiaries. Okay. Now, account for actions. Let me tell you something. The trustee is accountable for all of their actions. Okay? And they have to be accountable for the actions that the beneficiary does. Okay? But they also have to keep the beneficiary informed. So these include a duty to inform the beneficiary as their entitlement under the trust, and other matters concerning the trust. Trustees do not have a priority right to trust documents. Okay? It is a personal right and cannot be assigned. The right to seek disclosure of trust documents in an aspect of the court and hearing jurisdiction to supervise the administration of trust. Okay? See, the trustee is not under the duty to disclose the reasoning in applying trust power, unless the trust instrument requires them to do so. So there is no duty to disclose any document dealing with the decision-making process, but the protection of the confidentiality has been described as one of the most important limitations on the right to disclose of trust documents, right? Memorandum, letters of wishes, okay, all that shit, all right? They don't need to be disclosed to a beneficiary, okay? See, I want you to understand something. Every single time we start talking about trust, what we're really talking about, okay, when we're talking about your trustee, okay, is their ability to protect you in all facets, right? So let's say that them boys come around and they want to see what's going on in your trust and they start asking questions. You can't talk about it. I can't speak on that. Shit, my trust indenture. I can't speak on that. I'm sorry. If you want to see the trust indenture, it's going to cost you about, you know, $1 million an hour. I know that sounds crazy, but it's real. Okay? Now, trustees must also be loyal. Must have somebody that's loyal. Okay? Somebody that you trust. Okay? Trustees cannot delegate. Okay? Trustees can't tell nobody what to do. All they can do is their job. Trustees get out of line, you get fired, you go get you a new trustee. I don't care if it's your mama. Okay? Now, a trustee cannot profit. However, they may charge fees for the service of the trust. All right? So a trustee can't profit. All the trustee can do is charge fees for his services. See, this is another way you keep your trustee out of trouble. Okay? Now, a trustee must not be in conflict of interest position. Okay? What that means is the trustee can't also be the beneficiary. He can't also be the trust protector. He can't also, you know what I'm saying? He can't be all of that. Okay? The trustee cannot be an administrator either. Okay? He can't be an executor of the trust. Well, he can be an executor. Let me take that back. He can be an executor and an administrator in the sense that he's carrying out his job. Okay? Again, the job that he's being assigned to do or administrate. It's like a manager. Managers only have so much power. Still got to go to the owner. Now, a trustee, okay, must administer the trust in the best interest of the beneficiaries. Okay? If you fuck my trust up, I can sue you. Okay? Now, the modern interpretation of fiduciary duty requires the consideration of environmental, social, and governance factors, as these are long-term investment value drivers. So when evaluating whether or not an institutional investor has delivered on its fiduciary duties, both the outcomes achieved and the process followed are of critical importance. You understand? So there comes a time when you got to evaluate your trustee to see if he's doing his fiduciary duty. My nigga, did you make me some money? So you got to get you a trustee like Gucci Man, right? Where if you get locked up, nigga, you come out 3 years later, she done took your $1 million and flipped it in the vault. That's a trustee for you. A good woman to do that. I told y'all. I said it on Facebook. The man that finds a good wife finds a good trustee. Brothers, get your wives on board. I talk to brothers all the time, tell me how their wives, they can't, or they women, they can't get them on board. Listen, part of having trust also means you gotta have some assets, some property, some wealth accumulation. Right? That's the type of shit that's respectable. Knowledge is great, but it's nothing if it's not applied. Now, the terms of instrument, okay, that creates the trust may narrow or expand these duties, but in most instances, they cannot be eliminated completely. So corporate trustees, typically trust departments at large banks, often have very narrow duties, okay, limited to those the trust indenture explicitly defines. A trustee carries the fiduciary responsibility and liability to those trust assets according to the provisions of the trust instrument. You see? I could have like three trustees. One of them, I say, okay, you're in charge of bank account A. You're in charge of bank account C. You're in charge of bank account B. Each one is in charge of something different. If you choose that, the trustee may find himself liable to claimants, prospective beneficiaries, or third parties. So in the event that a trustee incurs a liability, for example, in litigation or for taxes under the terms of a lease, in excess of trust property that they hold, they may find themselves personally liable, okay, for the excess. And so if you decide to be somebody's trustee, you better be careful. So trustees are generally held to what they call a prudent person standard, okay, in regard to meeting their fiduciary responsibilities. So through investment, legal, and other professionals, okay, in some jurisdictions, they can be held to a higher standard. Trustees can be paid for their time and trouble in performing their duties only if a trust specifically provides for payment. So it's common that a lot of lawyers and shit will, you know, they'll take your money for drafting up stuff like indentures and declarations and all of that, right? But if you've been listening to us long enough, you know, you can just get those templates. You don't have to go pay all that extra money. A lot of this could be done on your own. Okay. Now, let's look at some trust basics, right? So it must be understood that any trust, regardless of the many designations applied to them, in the most basic sense, right, property interest held by one person, the trustee, at the request of another, what they call a settlor, okay, for the benefit of a third party who is the beneficiary. So the classification applied to a trust is based primarily upon its mode of creation, you see, how they created the trust. Was it created in the United States? Was it created outside the United States? Okay. So in which mode was it created? By the operation of law. So in the case of the former, trusts are divided into two types, express or implied. So without getting into the various subclasses of express and implied trust, the basic difference between one created by express act of a party and one created by the implied act, okay, is that the former is stated fully in language, okay, oral or written, okay, while the latter is inferred solely from the conduct of the parties. So these are very generalized definitions, so presented for the, you know, the one of space here, since we don't have a lot of time. So there are many intricacies concerning the true meaning of the term implied, right, an implied trust. Now, the most adequate definition of the express trust is to be understood from the earlier case law, which has been eloquently summed up, okay? And let me find it. Here it is. Express trust puts the legal estate entirely in one or more, while others have a beneficial interest in and out of the same, but are neither partners nor agents. This simple, adequate common law right, any person or group of persons, sui juris, may exercise, the trustee issuing certificates of beneficial and capital interest divided into shares, as well as issuing bonds and other obligations. Okay? So I want y'all to understand that it's all about bonds. It's all about obligations. And anytime we start talking about trust, it's for the benefit of somebody else. Right? So let me go here because I got this pulled up. So 26 U.S. Code, 679, Foreign Trust. Okay? And I want y'all to understand that they put this in the law for you. So it's not like you can't find this information, okay? Everything I'm telling you, you can go back and research. So a United States person who directly or indirectly transfers property to a foreign trust other than a trust described in Section 6048 should be treated as the owner for his taxable year of the portion of such attributable of such property, if or for such tax year the United States beneficiary. Okay? Now, I want you to understand that we've been talking about beneficiaries and trust. If you're transferring anything into a trust as a United States citizen, or what they call a United States person, well, they're going to tax you. So, special rules applicable to foreign grantor who later becomes a United States person, right? If a non-resident alien individual has a residency starting date within 5 years after directly or indirectly transferring property to a foreign trust, this section, 6048, shall be applied as if the individual transferred to such trust on the residency stating starting date. Okay? I want y'all to understand that people who become U.S. citizens voluntarily decide to go under the United States into the domestic realm. Okay? Now, I want to read something to you from the IRS. Okay. Although there are legitimate reasons why a U.S. person, a U.S. citizen, 14th Amendment, might create a foreign trust or have transactions with a foreign trust, they can have consequences and result in filing responsibilities as well. Regardless of your motivation, failure to meet these reporting and filing requirements can result in a very significant penalties. So the general rules. General rules of reporting that apply to U.S. persons, okay, who create trust, transfer money to foreign trusts, receive distributions from foreign trusts, okay, or are treated as the owners of foreign trusts. You see why it's so important for y'all to get the hell out of this thing? Okay? So I want y'all to understand that it's perfectly okay to have a 9-8 trust, but you must separate yourself from the trust. Okay? You must absolutely do this. If you don't, you're going to be dealing with a lot of problems and taxes. And taxes are a bitch. Let me go back to the handbook. How y'all feeling out there? A lot of information tonight. Okay. Now, because I told y'all this is a short show, so I got one more section here that we're going to look at tonight. Okay. And this is going to be like a series that we're going to do. We're going to follow along the lines of where John was going with trust, but we're going to take it a little bit slower when we're doing these shows on Sundays so y'all can get the basics of each particular group, right? But you got your trustee, you got your beneficiary, you got your trust protector, you got your settler. You got all these different positions. Okay? All right. So let's talk about the powers and the duties of the trustee. Powers of a trustee are divided into three categories: general, special, and discretionary. The general are all those inherent in trustee, the virtual official, right? Ordinarily conferred by trust law. The special are all those conferred by the trust instrument, right? And the discretionary are all those arising out of the necessity of what's called personal judgment. Okay? It's well settled law under a declaration of trust. So the trustees must have all the powers necessary to carry out the obligation of the private contract which they have assumed. Furthermore, it is settled that the trustees of an express trust are afforded greater latitude to carry out their duties than ordinary trustees. All right. Now, let's look at one more section here. I apologize, y'all. We got a lot going on around here tonight. We had a little family barbecue, if you will, tonight. I got mad people around. So, and actually, you know what? Let's stop there because I feel like I got a lot of people that's going to have a lot of questions. So we'll just kick it right there on the trustee tip. Let's go to the call line. It's 201-485. What's happening?
Peace to the God.
Peace to the God.
Oh, hold on a second. Hold on. Maybe you can hear me better. Hold on. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah. I can hear you. What's happening?
Okay. What's up, Joey? This is Sheldon. I was listening to the show, and I was just starting the trust. The templates that I got from you a couple weeks ago, and the question that I had was, say if I was trying to do the trust declaration, I guess like share, could I still have my wife as a trustee, but like she also, you know, with the information, so she was, you know, I was putting her together with the trust, so. The trust indenture, how can I connect that?
She can't be a beneficiary at the same time.
No, I don't have her as a beneficiary. I had her down as, like, trustee, grantor, and then my children as a beneficiary.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That's fine.
Okay. So the trust indenture, how would I connect that with the declaration? Because if I make the direct declaration, like, shared, like, and I'm changing it around and making it, like, you know, instead of, like, singular, dual, and then it's indenture is like this is going to be the 9-8, I would assume, like you were saying, correct?
I'm sorry.
You know, the one who's the indenture, like the name, who's going to be, I guess, a trustee on the indenture would be the 9-8 name, the 9-8 number. That's how,
right.
That's
yeah,
how we should set it up.
Yeah,
okay.
That's
so I could still rock like that, like even though it's like the declaration is dual, then a indenture would be just myself. You understand the question that I had, or?
Not really.
No. Okay.
When you do a trust indenture, it's supposed to cover everything, all of your property, your declaration
exactly.
of trust. Your declaration of trust is just stating, you know, how, you know, that you have a trust. You know, the indenture specifies the trustee's job. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was reading that over. Yeah. I was just finishing up the declaration. And I was looking at the indenture, and I was like, okay, how I'm going to connect it? You know, that's what I was, you know, you had the show tonight. I said, like, this is perfect. I'm going to listen in, try
mm-hmm.
to figure this out.
I wish I had more time tonight to dedicate to this show. I'm going to give this topic more time next week to really go in.
Okay.
Because I'm like hosting a party at the same time as I'm doing the show. So
yeah.
It's like I'm double dutching right now. But I got you, though. We're going to really go into this next week, though. But hey, if you want,
okay.
feel free to spend some time up with me. We can always go into this on the podcast.
All right.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. Thanks for calling, bro.
No problem. All right, man. Peace to the guy.
All right. Peace. All right. Peace. Let's go to 510-447.
Peace to the God.
Peace to the God. What's going on?
This is Brother Ali, man. I had to change my phone. You need to give me a call, man, ASAP.
I need to give you a call ASAP.
Yeah, could you give me a call ASAP? So I said,
yeah. I got you. I got your number locked in.
Yeah, this is a new number, though. Another shit that went down.
I got you. I
locked
you in.
All right, peace to the God.
I'm going to hit you up. I'll give you a call. Peace to the God. Go to 813-443.
Peace to the God.
Peace to the God. What's happening?
Yeah, brother, I'm kind of off subject right now, man, but I know you're the man to talk to about this situation, so I'm going to just shoot it to you. Man, I got a tort case going on. I hired a lawyer on a lawsuit, man. I'm trying to figure out what's the best route to go about this.
Well, if you hired a lawyer, then you got to fire an attorney, and then I can help you. If you got an attorney, ain't much I can do if you got an attorney.
There you go. So I got to fire my attorney. I mean, the tort case has been going on for a while. I was in an accident, and this lady smashed me. So I'm kind of got a lawsuit going against me. I'm really not trying to have no
surgery. I can help you out with a personal injury case. It's just that you'd have to get rid of the attorney, and then we can help you out. Because the attorney's like your guardian ad litem. So you'd have to get rid of him, and then we can talk about it.
All right, is he going to put a lien on the case if we fire him or something?
Nah, he ain't going to put no lien on the case. He couldn't do that. Not if you fired him.
All right. So if I get a consultation with you later on this week so we could talk about this and do this and show me the proper way to go through this?
Yeah, no problem. I got you.
Okay, brother. I'll be sending you an email later on this week and we'll set up a consultation. Oh. My name's Daryl, by the way, brother.
Okay, Bill. Talk to you this week.
Right. Appreciate it. Peace to the God.
All right, family. That's the show tonight. I hate to rush the fight here, but I promise y'all I will revisit this topic next week and we'll do an extra hour. Okay. If y'all want to holler at me throughout the week, I know where I'm at. I will be on the radio Friday, and I'll get with y'all Friday. All right. I'm up out of here. Peace to the God.
DipsetUSA.com.
Yes.
Go to booking@DipsetUSA.com
yes.
and make it happen if you're a promoter trying to get on.
Mm-hmm.
We only got about 5 more dates left. We got like 30 dates to go on the road. I'm very excited to go on the road with these brothers. I haven't been on the road since about 96 or 97.
Yeah.
No, I went on a tunnel tour, but it was different. My mind wasn't right. My mind's right this time.
New York City, you know what time it is.
Yeah.
Jim Jones, Killer Cam, Joel Santana, Freaky Zeke.
Dipset 2015.
Let's work.
We there, bro.
I'm all about this moolah.
Yep.
I'm all about about this bread. And if I get caught slipping,
what?
I can end up in the pit.
So,
bitch better have my money.
My money.
Nigga better have my money.
My money.
Bitch better have my money.
My money.
Nigga better have my money.
My man, baby mom, in the morning, tell him GM. Kiss him on the forehead, take the keys to his BM. And he was gonna tell you got the code to his DM. I head on the gram like hashtag free him. I'm biased, but all I got for these hoes is papaya. I done drove every car, no liar. I ain't talking music when I say I did shit with Mariah. Nick wasn't there, nor was Matola. Sitting on the crates, gun in the stroller. I was selling coke, no joke, no cola. Just made a quarter mil off Ebola. What's up?
I'm all about this moolah. I'm all about this bread. And if I get caught slipping, I can end up in the fit. Bitch better have my money.
You better have that.
Nigga better have my money.
You better have my
money. Bitch better have my money.
You better have that.
Nigga better have my money.
My
money.
I got bitches that can chef up with Eco. Dominican, he had the best for Eco. And we just trying not to catch the Rico. Remember what Mitch had heard from Rico. Well, niggas die every day, B. I'm getting money, getting fly every day, B. I pulled up inside the real AZ. And I was young when they tried to kill AZ. We kept it mob style like whip-wop. Audemars styling on a wristwatch.
See that?
Still do hollering in my flip-flops. Summertime hopping out the Rari with the missing top.
I'm all about this moolah. I'm all about this bread. And if I get caught slipping, I can end up in the pit. Bitch better have my money.
My money.
Nigga better have my money.
Nigga, my money.
Bitch better have my money.
My money.
Nigga better have my money.
Living life big, it's that more money shit. So no matter what I get, I'm screaming more money, bitch. More money coming in, more money spent. Smelling like money, that's that more money scent. AMG kit, that's that more money bands. Knock, knock, open the door, I'm letting more money in. She like, what's this more money shit? I'm like, them niggas that you with, I'm getting more money then. Pockets full of Chuck E. Cheese, I'm under the money tree and I'm just catching all the leaves. She just wanna feel a breeze, I just wanna on her knees, cold nigga, antifreeze.
I'm all about this moolah.
We've been about this motherfucking
money. I'm all about this bread. And if I get caught slipping, I can end up in the pit.
Fuck off.
Bitch better have my money. Nigga better have my money. Bitch better have my money. Nigga better have my money.
We out here, man. Ain't too much change with the money, huh? Shout out to Killer the Don, can't drop the jump. Joel Santana, the prince of the city.
Ooh. Huh.
Hey, Freaky, what's up? Iron Man himself, you heard me?
Don't get scared yet.